You're listening to Sounds Good. It's our midday music and community conversation program. I'm your host, Tracy Ross, and I'm pleased to talk this morning to Lisa Rahm. She's a registered dietitian and nutrition affairs program manager for the Southeast Dairy Association. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning.
And how are you today?
I am great. It's a beautiful day.
It is a beautiful day, and I think it's one of the last couple of days of summer. We're about to transition into autumn, and I don't know why, but for some reason when the weather gets a little cooler and the days get shorter, I start thinking about all the delicious food I'm going to be eating over the next few months, and this might be a great time to talk about some nutrition information and facts, right?
Armed with at least a few healthy tips to kind of defend yourself over the cold months.
Well, let's talk about if we're going to be feeding our bodies. You have something you like to say, which is called feed your brain. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, I think that really I'm just talking about how to give your brain all the things that it needs to be as healthy as possible. You know, to function optimally. There have been surveys actually of Americans asking, you know, what kind of concerns do you have about your health? And the interesting thing is that secondary only to heart health are concerns about brain health. So people are wondering, are there things that I can do when it comes to my lifestyle that might help slow mental decline or even potentially ward off conditions like Alzheimer's dementia? So I just like to make sure that people understand, you know, like your heart and all of your muscles, your brain too requires many essential vitamins and minerals.
What are some of these vitamins and minerals?
A lot of people are familiar with words like magnesium and calcium and iron and potassium and vitamin D. So those are kind of the things that come to mind. Now, vitamin D, I think a lot of us have heard a lot about. I'm going to guess you're familiar with the fact that vitamin D is a hot commodity, yeah?
I think I've heard about that a couple of times.
Yeah, definitely. You've heard a lot. And, you know, it's fascinating because in recent years, we've been discovering more and more about the role of vitamin D, and it's a common deficiency because generally our body makes it from sunlight, and in today's busy lives, we don't get nearly as much sun exposure as we once did. So we're always looking for ways to get it from our diet. And really what it comes down to is that milk is the leading source of vitamin D in the American diet. I don't think people always realize just how great a source it is because it only takes a single glass of milk, which is a small amount, only 8 ounces, to get 25% of the recommended daily intake of vitamin D. So that's a great source. And then another perk is that cheese and yogurt, we all know, are made from milk. And while they haven't traditionally been fortified with vitamin D, it's becoming more and more common. So you can get all those different brain nutrients, including the vitamin D, from the dairy foods, and then, of course, other foods as well.
What about those unfortunate individuals who are lactose intolerant? I know a few of them.
Yeah, and, you know, those people are always thinking, oh, no, I can't drink milk. But if you paid attention and you look in the grocery stores, you'll see a lot of lactose-free milks on the shelf these days. Some stores have their own brand. There are also some brand names. And I think that people often think it's something different. It's not real milk, but it's actually real milk. It's cow's milk. It has all those same nutrients in there, including the vitamin D. It just doesn't have the lactose. So I kind of like to say to people, you don't have to ditch the dairy. You can still go for the lactose-free. And when I've counseled people as a dietitian over the years, they'll say, well, I thought I couldn't eat cheese and yogurt because I have lactose intolerance. But the good thing is that a lot of cheese and yogurt has almost no lactose. So most people could tolerate those things. So you got lots of healthy options.
Are there any other foods and also methods that maybe aren't food-based we can use to boost brain power?
Yeah, well, when you're saying not food-based, the first thing that comes to mind is really being physically active. I try not to use the word exercise because I know some of us don't like that word. It's a little intimidating. So physical activity, right? And that just means movement. A lot of people do things these days like count steps. Maybe they wear a pedometer or they have some sort of device. So when I talk in terms of steps, many people are probably familiar with the recommendation of getting 10,000 steps a day. Well, it's only about 2,000 steps a day, which is about a mile of movement, that studies show is beneficial to brain health. So you can do that through simple things like, you know, the little suggestions, such as parking further away from the entrance to the store. If you go to the grocery store, take the cart all the way back to the front, that sort of stuff. And of course, you know, other things like making sure that you're getting plenty of sleep and that you're making sure to keep stress levels down. All those things are going to help with your brain's power, if you will. And then on the point of other foods, are you familiar with the Mediterranean diet? Have you heard of that?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so a lot of people have heard mention of the DASH diet or the Mediterranean diet. And when we're thinking of that, what should come to mind visually are dark, leafy greens, all kinds of bright, vibrant colors. You know, berries are one of the first things that come to my own mind. Olive oil, fatty fish like salmon and tuna. And then you hear people say, oh, you should eat nuts, walnuts, almonds, pistachios. So all those things are great sources for different reasons, one of them being the omega-3 fatty acids that we know are so crucial to brain health. So really, when you have that mixture of all these different foods along with the dairy foods, you get that interaction that's so beneficial.
We were talking about exercise just a moment ago. That, I guess, maybe ironically or not, that's a good way to fight fatigue, is actually to do something that will make you fatigued. But are there food-based remedies for fatigue? And I especially want to talk about breakfast. Is breakfast as important as we've always been told it is?
You know, I think so. And some people will argue that point at different times. But really, I think the logic is there that breakfast kind of sets the stage for the rest of the day. You know, there's even an abundance of research looking at which foods are going to be most effective in warding off fatigue and getting our brain and our body to function best throughout the day. And when researchers look at that, they always find the same results: high fiber whole grains, dairy, nuts, fruits. So when you're making a breakfast that combines all of those beneficial foods, then you pretty much can, you know, rely on the fact that you're going to have the energy to power through. On our website for the Southeast Dairy Association, which is southeastdairy.org, we have a lot of great recipes. And I think one that really suits kind of this coming into fall, since you mentioned that a little while ago, that might appeal to people is a really awesome butternut spice oatmeal. And so you use those whole grains, the oatmeal, and instead of using water, you use milk. You get the vitamin D and the other nutrients. And then you can put butternut squash in there, which a lot of people wouldn't think of. Or you could substitute maybe pumpkin, and it's got cinnamon. So it's kind of like eating pumpkin pie for breakfast. I don't think too many people would have a complaint about that.
That's a pretty easy sell to me, Lisa, I'll tell you what. tell us about those mid-afternoon, 2, 2:30. You've had lunch. You're sitting at your desk. You start to nod off. Are there some snacks that we can utilize to give us that kick for the last couple hours of the workday?
When people ask me about snacking, I always say, hey, let's not call it a snack. Let's kind of call it like a mini meal. So I'm always encouraging people to make sure they're eating well-balanced combinations. We want to get carbohydrates, which are the body's preferred fuel source. And I don't mean we want to eat pastries and danishes. I mean we want to eat whole grains. We also get carbohydrates from dairy. We want to get protein, and we want to get a little fat. We want it to stick to our ribs. So when we're looking at snacks, we want to make sure they have all of those things. And another recipe that I can suggest at southeastdairy.org is this awesome avocado hummus. Hummus has become, you know, a pretty hot item these days. And so hummus, if you don't know, is made from chickpeas, which are a type of bean or legume. And so they're full of protein. They've got carbohydrate. If you mix it with avocado, which is a very healthy source of fat, and then you blend in some Greek yogurt, which is also going to give you an excellent source of protein as well as carbohydrate, then you're going to have something that really kind of, you know, gives you a boost and sticks with you, plus all those essential vitamins and minerals for muscles and brain. So you kind of get the best of both worlds again when you put it all together.
You're talking about proteins and fats. I want to talk about something that I love that I think is delicious, and that's sugar. But I've heard, actually, that eating sugar might not be great for you. Is that true?
Well, I think that what it really comes down to is that it's about eating too much of what we call added sugar, right? And most people are focused on their waistline, which is certainly a concern, but it also can affect our health in a lot of other ways, increasing the risk for chronic diseases that are so common in today's society, like cardiovascular disease or diabetes. And really what I find when I'm working with people one-on-one and we're talking about sugar is that Well, Tindalak is kind of what I'd call sugar savvy. People don't really understand how to differentiate between the terms added sugar and naturally occurring sugar. So maybe I can explain a little bit about that?
Yes.
Okay. So just putting it simply, there are really two types of sugar in our diet. And the easiest one to understand are the naturally occurring sugars. Because when you hear the word natural, you think nature. So if nature created it, like a fruit or a vegetable or a whole grain or dairy, it's going to have naturally occurring sugars in it. And those are meant to fuel the body. And when you're consuming those natural foods, you're getting that energy plus a whole wealth of vitamins and minerals. So an easy example for people to relate to is most people have heard of the lactose you mentioned a little while ago in milk. So that's the naturally occurring sugar that is in dairy products. And, you know, when we're consuming dairy products and we're getting that lactose, we're also getting all of these other things like calcium. So milk is actually the leading source of calcium, so you can't go wrong there. And then to your point earlier, if someone can't tolerate lactose, it's okay because they can choose those other foods. Now, when it comes to added sugars, just think we're adding it. I'm standing at the counter and I'm pouring honey or some sort of syrup on my food. Or somebody who's preparing it in a factory or restaurant is sprinkling in some sugar. Those are the ones that are the culprits.
And what can we do to curb those cravings for sugar?
There are so many things. You know, first of all, I think patience, right? So when you feel like you have some sort of a crazy sugar craving, if you can wait a little while, there's actually research that indicates that people wait 20 minutes, their cravings will usually subside. Another thing that we can do is we can make sure that we're eating those balanced meals that I mentioned before, because when we're doing that, when we're eating healthfully every chance we get, it really does stick with us, and it, you know, it holds us over, and we don't get those lulls and those dips in our energy that are usually the bigger culprit in our cravings. And then I would say, if you really feel like you got to give in, since you said you love sugar, for example, I would say put quality over quantity. Make sure that if you're going to do it, you're going to really make it worth it and choose something you really love.
Hey, I like that advice a lot. We've talked about so much information today. Where on the web can the listeners go to get more information about what we've spoken about?
Sure. Well, the recipes that I've mentioned and many other wonderful ones are available at southeastdairy.org. They can check us out at Southeast Dairy on Pinterest or follow us on Twitter using @thedairyRD. RD stands for Registered Dietitian.
Lisa Rahm is a registered dietitian, also a nutrition affairs program manager for the Southeast Dairy Association. Lisa, thank you so much for talking to me this morning. It was a very interesting conversation.
Well, I hope I've armed everybody with some useful knowledge.
Have a great day.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You're with Murray State's 91.3 WKMS. We sound good because of listeners like you.